Let's do this one from Giselle, who says, I have a Lenovo Tablet S5000. It's about 3 years old. The screen has stopped responding. I've tried switching it off and on many times. It is working, it's operating, as I can see notifications and it charges, but the screen has stopped responding. Any ideas how to resolve?
Yeah. Giselle, unless the problem was coinciding with an update to the software, and particularly the operating system software, after that period of time, it's more likely to be a hardware problem. The screen itself could have failed, or the circuit supporting the screen. The best that I can suggest to you, other than to try and do a factory reset, which the way that you do that varies from phone to phone, but it's usually a combination of two buttons on the phone, on the device rather, at the same time, which will take it back to factory reset. But you can look up how to do that for your specific device. If that doesn't bring it back to life, then it's likely to be a hardware fault. And you know, tablets have got a lot cheaper over the last few years, so it may be that it may be time to consider a new one. Often what you can do is you can take a device to a vendor, ideally the one you got it from, but also there's a lot of third-party repairers, and they can give you a price, you know, a fixed price for actually fixing it. The other thing to bear in mind is, you know, we often have insurances on these things that we may have forgotten about. It's just worth checking that you didn't have any sort of extended insurance. But my guess is it's probably a hardware fault, and my guess, further guess, is that it may not be an economic repair if the screen itself has gone, because the screen on the tablet is one of the most expensive single components that there is. Yeah, so,
of course.
The way to do it is try the full reset, look up how to do it on that particular device. If that doesn't work, present it to an independent repairer and just say to them you want a price for fixing it, but they're not to do anything chargeable without your explicit permission.
Rob in Wiltshire is standing by to speak to you, Fevzy. Let's go to Rob. Hi, Rob.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I've got it's a bit of a different one, this one. I hope he can help me. I live off-grid. I've got no power, no mains electric.
Wow.
Et cetera. Now, I'm self-employed, run my own business. I work outdoors. I'm a tree surgeon, basically.
Great.
I need a PC for work. I've just finally got a Facebook page, et cetera, which a friend set up for me, and she sort of helped me every sort of couple of weeks to run it, et cetera.
Yeah.
I've spoken to BT about getting Wi-Fi connected here.
Yeah.
And they say they can do it, but the box is on the other side of the road. There's only one house in the street. But they reckon they can do it. It was reasonably... I could afford it, but it's got to come across the road, etc. And I still can't think they can do it, but they say they can do it. I'll get 4G, reasonably good 4G connection here. But, you know, I really need a computer for work, you
sure.
know, for various things, running a business.
No, of course you do, it's virtual utility.
I've got a generator, so I've got, you know, can have power, and I'm going to fit solar panels eventually.
Yeah.
I was offered through, I went to one of the main mobile firms, and they offered me a tablet, you know, that I could connect. Is it on 4G tablet or something? I don't fully understand
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Again, that was a sort of 20-odd, £30 a month or whatever. So I don't really know the best way to go.
Okay.
I just thought, wonder if Fevzy could help me. I've got
sure
a pad here to write any notes down.
<That's>
just a bit of a different question.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Rob, if you don't get it all in the notes, this segment is podcast afterwards in the Let's Talk
okay,
About
cool.
Tech podcast, so you can always download it later.
Yeah.
But I will speak slowly. Can I get an indication, Rob, first of all, what sort of money BT have asked for to connect you on a monthly basis?
I was trying to remember, because they called me a couple of times. They were quite keen on getting me connected, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
I think it was something like £100 or £150. But I live about... The property where I'm in is about 200 metres from the road, down a little track.
Yeah.
And then the BT box is on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
So I was trying to work out... I thought, how are they going to get the connection to me? If they're going to have to put a pole up, you know, to get it across the road... Are they going to burrow under the road and do it that way? And all of that, you know, is expensive. And I just thought, well, it's a hell of a cable run as well. And I thought, Well, that just seems a bit cheap to me, because I've had a quote from the electric company to put electric on here, mains electric, and that was £4,500.
Yeah, that sounds about right for supply to even a premises on the high street. It runs into the thousands. So that figure of £100-£150, Rob, is that a one-off connection fee and then there's a monthly charge on top, or are they?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. And the monthly charge would be about what? About £20 or something?
They were quoting £32 something, plus I asked about BT, you know, TV, because I've not got a telly. I've never had a telly since I've been here.
And did they mention
a bit of money?
I'm sorry I interrupted you, Rob. Did they mention BT Infinity, or are they offering you what's called an ISDN service? An ADSL service, I beg your pardon.
Okay. I honestly can't remember. Right. I think it was Openreach I spoke to, but...
Yeah, well, Openreach are just BT's arm that deal with the installations.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So let's take this in stages. So you've got two choices. Effectively, you can have what is, a wired internet connection coming into your home, which you can then attach to a wireless router, which can then give you both wired and Wi-Fi connections in your home. And that's the most conventional way of doing it. And the type of broadband that a provider can give you will either be unless it's Virgin, in which case they run their own cables, but as Virgin aside, you've either got something called ADSL, which is the most common type of broadband connection, but then you've got faster fiber cabinets, sometimes called fiber to cabinet, fiber connection, which BT call Infinity, and the Infinity connection will give you a much faster internet connection, which is nice to have. Otherwise, that £32 a month is on the high side. You can get standard internet much more cheaply than that. So if you are going to go that route and they're bringing a BT phone line. I mean, you don't have a BT phone line coming into your home at the moment, no?
No, it's completely off-grid. There's nothing to anything.
So if they bring a BT phone line into your property, then bear in mind that after any initial contract period, you've got the ability to go to other providers, which will then provide their service over that BT wire. So, that's the conventional way of doing it. Then there's a standard ADSL, and then the fast fiber, or as BT will call it, Infinity. That's better if you can get that. That's much quicker and will give you a better service. That sort of connection is usually limitless in terms of the amount of data you use. There are some limitations in that if you use it to download films all day every day, there may be what they call a fair use policy that will start to slow your connection down. But in essence, you get an unlimited amount of data under most deals. Now, if you went for the alternative, which is a 4G signal, all 4G contracts, whilst 4G contracts may give you unlimited minutes and texts for mobile phone use, for example, they all in this country have a limit on the amount of data that they provide, which can be limiting even for a mobile device and would be more limiting if you're using it as your main internet connection. So unless your usage in terms of the amount of data you're going to have is going to be light, I wouldn't say that a 4G connection was the way to go, because you're going to start hitting limits. And particularly, you've mentioned in this call, you know, things like television. If you wanted to stream movies or TV or some such over an internet connection, then you really don't want to be doing that over 4G mobile for any period of time. What I would suggest you do is you can contact me about this on Twitter if you've got access to it. I'm on Gadget Detective, but for the specific deal. But in principle, I would say for you, it's better if they can get that wired connection into your home. That's going to give you more flexibility. And when you get your router, you could just use a router they give you, but there are sorts of routers that you can buy that will attach to that wired connection, but also take a SIM card as a backup. So if you ever had, the main internet fail, the SIM card could kick in and provide you with, you know, temporary limited data. But just be aware of the terms of use of that SIM card, because if you go over the limited amount of data that they provide you with, it gets very expensive very quickly. But that's a way of sort of providing backup. As regards to how they would do it, you know, that's their problem. If they don't provide the service, you don't have to pay for it. What they should certainly give you is an indication of what sort of speeds that you should achieve. And if they don't achieve those speeds, then again, you've got certain rights of cancellation.
Rob, it's going to be quite a big change for you, is it, getting on the grid and connecting up to the internet and things?
It would be amazing if I could get it. I mean, BT said it could be 18 megabytes per second they thought they could give me, but I don't know, it's just the connection. It's just difficult, you know, where I am with the road, et cetera, and the distance involved. But are they obliged to connect me? If I ask for a connection, are they obliged to do it? And is it like a set charge that they have to stick to? Is that correct?
There are circumstances where, particularly with businesses, where if they want particularly, let's say, fibre and it's just not available, they can actually pay for some of the infrastructure costs that Openreach would incur in providing it. And by the way, an 18 megabit service would tend to suggest that it's an ADSL setup, not
right.
Fibre. You should speak to them about fibre, and certainly that figure that you quoted of 30 or plus 30, £32 a month is definitely on the high side. So, you know, what you might do, have you tried logging on to BT's website and actually trying to test the availability from your postcode and phone? Well, you haven't got a phone number, but from your postcode, and see what's available. See if fibre is available.
Right.
And also check with, you'd need to get a BT line in first. Are you in an area where Virgin operates their services?
No, I don't think in this particular street, because it's quite a rural, as you can imagine, it's quite a rural area. It's right on the outskirts of a big town, but it's...
Yeah, I understand.
I think there's a Virgin down the road, but there's only one, you know, house opposite me, which is a friend of mine, and they're definitely connected to BT, and the BT box is outside, you know, it's a buried box in the ground. But
Okay, Rob.
There.
Just to finish off then, I think you should shop around and, first of all, speak to Virgin to see if their cable network will run in your area and see if that's an option for you. If it's not, then you're going to get a BT line put in. You should be very clear about the contract terms for that line in terms of both the initial installation costs, the monthly charges, and what you will receive, and they should really put all that to you in writing before you sign up for anything, so you don't get any nasty surprises. Once you've got the BT line in after an initial contract period, and check what the contract period is, and hopefully it won't be, you know, more than a year, then you're free to get services from other providers who will piggyback. It's a bit like, you know, you've only got one gas pipe that comes into a property, but you can have different companies providing you with that gas and billing you for it. So it's similar with your phone line as well. In the future, you'll be able to get others to do that. But it's a better way to go than trying to do it on a mobile phone SIM, which will get limiting very quickly.
Rob, thank you so much. Thank you for getting in touch, and do keep us posted with progress as it happens in the next few weeks. Thanks, Rob.
Cheers, bye.
Cheers, Fevzy. A few more text messages just to try and fit in before 3:30. This one from Frank says, "Hi, I have a Windows phone. It's very economical, but is it likely to be supported in future? Does Windows Phone have a future? Is it looking bright for Windows?"
Now, I'm getting all sort of teary-eyed here, because I'm actually quite a fan of Windows phones. And
right.
I gave up my last Windows phone as a day-to-day phone, recently. And actually, we mentioned Nokia at the beginning of the programme. Nokia did some of the best Windows phones out, which is why Microsoft bought them and then gutted them, unfortunately. Windows Phone in its current incarnation is not supported in that there are very few apps available for it. I think what will happen is new Windows type devices will be launched by Microsoft in the next year, but they're not in a great rush to do that, because they really got their fingers burnt, and you know, the mobile world belongs to Apple and Android at the moment. So in terms of app support anytime soon, you're talking either about an iPhone or an Android phone, which can be made by any number of manufacturers but has the Google's Android software inside it. I think Microsoft are going to have another go at this platform, but when they do, That's not to say any existing Windows phone will be capable of running that software. It's quite likely that it won't. So in terms of anything that you could buy today, I couldn't, in all, unless you said to me, you know what, all I really want is a smartphone that does the basics, has the basic apps, and I don't really care about apps because I've got an iPad or something already. Mm. All I want is a nice looking, nice behaving smartphone. You can get really good deals on the hardware because the app support for them is dying on its feet, as it were. So sadly, for most scenarios, I couldn't recommend you use it. The only scenario, and the way I used to use it, is I had apps running on other devices, and then I used that just as a excellent hardware, cheap smartphone.
Mm. Here's another one from Adam in Comrie, who says, on Wednesday, I used Internet Explorer and Edge on my Windows 10 system PC to look at items on Amazon. Yesterday, when I booted the PC up, it stalled when it started, and when it did boot, I found an app for Amazon planted on my taskbar. I didn't ask for it, but it installed itself in a way that will make me fully install this app before I can remove it. Mm. Is this a genuine article? He says, Intel, Adobe, McAfee, Trio put a similar program on my PC too. Is this right?
Yeah. It's very interesting that you talk about those two particular Microsoft browsers, Explorer and Edge, because a critical vulnerability was reported by Google, as it would happen, which is in many ways a competitor to Microsoft. And this has not been patched. So the first thing I'll say is be very wary about using either of those browsers until Microsoft patch it, and they haven't done. So The way that this works is that Google often finds bugs in other people's software because they've got engineers, they use a lot of software, and they'll come across bugs. They will report those bugs secretly, in this case to Microsoft, but give them a limited time in which to fix it. If Microsoft haven't fixed it within that time, Google go public with the bug. They do that to put pressure on Microsoft to fix the bug quickly, but in doing that they make everyone more vulnerable because miscreants that didn't know about the bug now do and may be able to take advantage of it. So the first thing is I would actually keep away from those two browsers for the time being until Microsoft say that they've fixed this critical update, because it really is a gaping hole in both of those browsers. Mm. And for that reason I wouldn't go near either of them. In terms of what you've got there, it's hard to be sure. If it is in a position where you can actually uninstall it, and if it gives you an option to uninstall it, for example in the add and remove program section of your operating system, if you can do that, or if it's an add-on to the browser, whether it gives you within the browser the option to unload it, then do so. I would be very wary about further installing anything in order to get it off there. I would instead start to do some research to see how I could actually, what it is that's on my system and how I could get it off. And I'd be very reticent to download anything further, because it clearly may not be what it purports to be. Mm. Obviously,
sounds a bit suspicious, doesn't it? That it just
does
appeared.
Because, mm. Yes, I mean, sometimes it happens that, when you download one thing, particularly a free bit of software, the way they make their money is by obvious, by default, making
something else comes with it.
Yeah, and that's, in my view, that's bad practice. I don't like that, and you have to keep your eyes open. So it may be that you've consented to it without knowing that you've consented, as it were, which of course is not true consent. But it may also be that this is a piece of malware. Mm. The fact that other bits aren't picking up, I mean, you mentioned you're on Windows. I would do a safe mode start. In other words, start the machine up in its most basic mode, and then I would do a full virus scan, because if the virus is running in the background, if it is malware, it's running in the background, it can interfere with the operation of your security software. Yeah. So the way to get around that is to start up the machine in what's called safe mode.
Right, just a couple more then before 3:30. Hopefully a relatively straightforward one here from Michael. Can I still buy a true pay-as-you-go SIM card deal for a smartphone, one where you pay an amount and use the phone over the year without having to pay every month. It's actually interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of pay-as-you-go deals did kind of evolve into this top up every month and get sort of a perk, and it makes you feel like you should be topping up every month, and then you kind of end up with loads of money on your phone that you're never actually using.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you're right. The ones that are described as things like pay and go and pay as you go generically are not strictly pay as you go anymore, because they are, in effect, they're 1 month rolling contracts. And the critical thing about that is that the credits expire at the end of each month, at the end of each billing period, so any unused credit can expire. Now, there are still deals available where one of my family members has one of these where their usage is very low and they use it, you know, like a backup phone. So they just need to know they've got credit on it in the case of an emergency and it goes in the glove box of the car, for example. You can get those. Most networks still do them. So people like, you know, Virgin will offer it, O2 will offer it. You know, there are options out there, but you need to ask for them. They're often even not on the websites anymore. But if you ring up and ask, they will often offer it to you. And the key that you need to look for is, I'm sure you are aware, the key to this is to have something where the units don't expire. Mm. On the face of it, those units will be more expensive per minute than those monthly rolling deals. But if you're going to use very few units every month, it can work out much cheaper, because the same units can still be there 6 months later. So the fact that you might be paying twice as much for the units will be more than offset. So it depends on your usage pattern. You need to have some idea of, how many minutes of calls you're going to make. And similarly, for data and so forth, you really have to be quite a low user of low amount of calls for it to be cost effective, which is one of the reasons why it's not so widely available.
Yeah, and I'll probably only be able to give you sort of 30 seconds on this one, Fabsy.
Sorry. To be quick. Yeah, that's my fault.
No, not at all. Stuart in Birmingham says, would you buy or trust Apple AirPods? Everyone says if I buy them, they'll fall out and I'll lose them. So he's a bit hesitant, but he likes the idea of them without wires. What do you recommend?
Look, they're easy to use. The quality is good for a wireless device, but yes, they can fall out. They don't fall out as easily as you might think, but they can fall out, and Apple have announced the cost of replacing one of the pods, which the fact that they've done that is an acknowledgement of the fact that people will lose them. It's not cheap. I think it's nearly half the cost of the pair. So, I personally wouldn't be my favourite choice. I personally like the design where you've got sort of a horseshoe-shaped yoke that sits around your neck and wired earphones that then go in from there. They get better battery life, often better signal as well, because they're not having to build everything into the tiny little pods. Plus, I mean, some personal choice, but I just think they look like weird jewelry. It always reminds me of that Doctor Who episode with the Cybermen that have taken control of everyone, you know, by plugging these earpods in. So I'm not suggesting that Apple is a cyber controller, by the way. It's just so we're clear.
Of course not. Fevzy, thank you so much. Thank you for your time this morning.
Pleasure.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.